Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cutting Chai Stories, where the stories are short and sometimes sweet, just like the half servings of milky tea we call cutting chai back home in India. I'm your host, Jayati Vora, and today I am very excited to bring you a special guest, Krupa Shandilya. Krupa is the Associate Professor of Sexuality, Women's and Gender Studies at Amherst College, and she is currently working on a co-translation of Miraji. He was a mid-20th century Urdu poet. And one of the poems from that work, that's called Non-Being, was just published in translation in the Paris Review. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Also, very importantly, Krupa is what we affectionately call a chaddi buddy. The polite translation of that expression is someone you've known since you were a child, but chaddi actually means underwear. So you get the drift. She's my buddy from the time we were in chaddis together. Krupa, thank you so much for being on this podcast. I'm so happy you're here.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure, Jayati.
You're here to tell us a little bit about Miraji and about poetry in translation. Can you tell us who he was? I think most of our listeners will not be familiar with him.
He began his career as an editor of Adabi Dunya, and he is born in 1912. He died in 1949. So around the 1930s, he started gaining really prominence as this literary editor. And one of his marks as an editor was translating poetry from English and French into Urdu. So when we began this process of translation, we were like, oh, so what is it going to be like to translate somebody who himself was not only a poet, but also a translator? So that's how our journey began.
That's so cool. What? Which country did he live in?
He was born in Lahore and he died in Bombay. So this was pre-partition South Asia.
So what did you like about his poetry, other than the, you know, other than his background that he wrote about sexuality and other things?
Well, I mean, to tell you frankly, what I liked about his poetry is that I didn't understand it, because I really wanted to get to a poet who presented complexity and who presented difficulty in a different way than, say, a 19th century ghazal poet like Ghalib would present. Because in Ghalib's work, there is a meaning. You just have to work really hard to get it. But in Miraji's work, the meaning is so open and open to interpretation, and just open in so many different ways that there's no really fixed meaning. That's what I really liked about
it. Well, I think that's the perfect segue into my next question, which is that, can you read a snippet of his poem to us? If you could, in Urdu first, and then the translation, your translation in English.
Sure. So the poem is called Adam Ka Khala. Hawa ke jhonke idhar jo aaye to inse kehna. यहाँ कोई ऐसी शय नहीं जिसे वो ले जाए साथ अपने यहाँ कोई ऐसी शय नहीं जिसे कोई देखकर ये सोचे कि ये हमारे भी पास होती.
What does that sound like in English?
In English, actually, so the poem is actually The Void of Non-Being, but we decided to keep the title Non-Being. Non-Being. Should the gusts of wind come this way, then tell them, there's nothing here that they could take away with them. There is nothing here that someone could look at and think, if only this were ours too.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Were there any words or phrases in that you struggled with translating? I can imagine that, you know, you don't always have the mirror image word in another language.
Translation is a real process, you know, takes a really long time. And in fact, we started translating this poem in 2017 and it's out in publication in 2020.
Wow. Why did it take so long?
So it wasn't just this poem. We were translating, our aim is to translate about 10% of Miraji's work. So that's about 85 poems. So when we began this process, we began by just making a literal translation of the poem. So word by word. However, as we were doing that, we realized that this is not a poem. It's just a word-by-word translation. It's like Google Translation could spit it out. So how do you then go about and make that into a poem, right? And that necessarily involves having to choose between keeping the exact word and then choosing the sense of a word.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried to do that. And the first stanza, in fact, I read that it wasn't so hard. But in other ones, it was so much harder, especially when the grammar gets more complex and then the ideas and the images get more complex. How do you represent that?
Do you feel like translation is always a process where you lose something?
Well, inevitably, you lose something and you gain something. What you gain is a new poem. In fact, it's not the same poem at all. It's another poem in another language.
That's what's so fascinating about translation for me, because I feel like you have to be true to the original text, but you also have to produce a poem in translation. So how did you do that? I mean, did you, like, for instance, did you try to keep line breaks the same? Or did you, you know, does he use rhyme in the original? And did you try to hold on to that somewhere? How do you, where's the defining line where you say, okay, this is Miraji's poem and this is our poem?
Yeah, so in fact, to speak very broadly, there's a spectrum in translation. On the one hand is very, very literal. And on the other end of the spectrum is a very loose translation, which is what I would say Aga Shahid Ali's translation of Fez is like. It's a transcreation. And we, I would place us somewhere in the middle of that. Say we want to maintain fidelity to the text, but we also want to make it a poem. And so we necessarily have to make very difficult choices, which is why it took us 3 years.
Was there anything particularly difficult about translating from Urdu to English versus, say, I don't know, Hindi to Bengali or like some other languages?
I think any poem presents a challenge in translation. And the challenge is that you not only have to translate words, you have to translate a world. And by a world, I mean a way of being, a way of thinking, an imaginative and lyrical idea into another language, which doesn't always have those same ideas or tropes at all. So how do you do that? Right? And how do you make it communicable but still strange? Because you don't want, at least for us as translators, you never want your reader to think that this is just a poem. You want it to be somehow unfamiliar to the reader so the reader realizes it's a translation.
What would you say to poets writing in their first language? What can they learn about poetry in translation?
Yeah, I think that it's important when you're writing a poem to not only think about yourself, but to enter into other imaginative worlds. And I think that's what translation gives you permission to do, is to enter in somebody else's imaginative world and in another language. And the more widely you read, and the more languages you read in, and the more translations you read, the more different kinds of poetic worlds you can enter.
And who are some of the poets who have inspired you? What do you look for in poetry?
One of my favorite English poets is Gerard Manley Hopkins, and the reason is because he plays so much with language, and also that he has a very unique relationship to the ways in which words sound. So it's not just the word, but how it sounds in the poem.
Can you give us an example?
There's this poem by him, God's Grandeur, and you can see in this poem how he uses words. The world is charged with the grandeur of God. It will flame out like shining from shook foil. It gathers to a greatness like the ooze of oil. So if you notice over here, the way he uses G's and the way he uses O's to great effect, right? So the G's are pointing to something gathering, something building, and the O's are pointing to this expansion of that. So I really enjoy that about his poetry.
Who do you like in terms of Urdu poetry or poetry in other languages?
I would say that Ghalib is one of my favorites from the 19th century, and I know that's a boring answer, but he is one of my favorites. I like Fez.
Anything else that you want to tell our listeners about poetry and translation?
Yes,
or poetry
and one important thing I want to mention is that for me, translation has always been a process of collaboration. And I think that it's something to be learned, that when you collaborate with somebody, you really enter into their idea of language and their idea of words, which is so important and so beautiful. Because by myself, I can only think of like 5 words or 6 words. And when I'm with somebody, they can think of 5 or 6 words. And then together, we can think of like 13, 15 words together, you know. And as we talk, more and more words come up and more ideas come up of what the poem should look like.
Before we get to the prompt, I wanted to let you know that my July session of creative writing classes for children begins after the July 4th weekend. I'll be offering 4 weeks of classes on Zoom, 1 hour each, and the subject will be point of view, or shifting your perspective, for children from the ages of 7 to 14. You can find more information on my website, gumroad.com/cuttingchaistories. As you know, Krupa, I always end my episodes with a writing prompt, and I was hoping that you had one to share today with our listeners.
I recommend that you write a poem that starts with I am. And just the first line of every verse should begin with I am. And then put the poem aside for a week and then come back and rework whatever you did. Give it a new title and start again.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Krupa.
Thank you, Jayati. Thank you. It was so much fun being here.
And until we meet next time, write me some poetry.